Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Good morning, heathens. Happy Murder in the News Monday. So, you guys are killing it with the articles, sending me articles. I really appreciate it. The International Squad would love for you to join in if you can, if you want to participate. This is so much fun. It's like we're our own little group, you know, we're our own little secret group. Okay. So, our first article comes from EastIdahoNews.com. Now, did you think I was going to talk about Chad Daybell? Because it's actually not. But we already know that Idaho is apparently lit when it comes to crime. I know people in Idaho. It's okay. And the title reads, "A mom found a jawbone in her son's rock collection. 22 years later, genealogy researchers ID'd the remains of a U.S. Marine." So more than 20 years after a mother found a human jawbone hidden in her son's rock collection, genetic genealogy experts have unraveled the discovery and identified the partial remains of a U.S. Marine Corps captain. Adding to the decades-long mystery was that 30-year-old Captain Everett Leland Yeager, who died in a military training exercise in July of 1951 over Riverside County, California, was previously thought to have been buried in Palmyra, Missouri. Oh, I hail from Missouri, and I have no idea where Palmyra is. No clue. The Ramapo College of New Jersey's Investigative Genetic Genealogy Center, which opened 2 years ago, helped identify the bone as belonging to Yeager in March, according to a news release. The plot thickens. The son had inherited the rocks from his grandfather, who was an avid rock collector, according to the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office in northern Arizona. In 2002, his mother found the collection. She came across what looked to be human remains and contacted the sheriff's office, authorities said in a statement. The sheriff's office received a human jawbone containing several teeth that officials said was likely picked up somewhere in the county, though the family who found it in their son's rock collection was not certain exactly where or when, according to the Investigative Genetic Genealogy Center. The remains were dubbed, quote, "Rock Collection John Doe." It's not clear how the jawbone ended up in Arizona, but it's possible, according to the Ramapo College, that a bird picked it up from California. Okay. Traditional DNA testing at the time yielded no government database matches to the remains. In January of 2023, the sheriff's office and the Yavapai County Medical Examiner referred the case to the Investigative Genetic Genealogy Center. The college partnered with the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office to work on the case for free. Quote, "Because investigative genetic genealogy," how many times do you have to put that in the article, "uses a different type of DNA testing than what's normally performed under law enforcement. The remaining extract from previous DNA testing that was done needed to go to a second laboratory," an assistant director of the college told CNN. "The extract was sent to a forensics lab in Salt Lake City, Utah, where it underwent advanced DNA genotyping," Binder said. "From there, a profile was developed and uploaded to two genealogy databases, GED Match Pro and Family Tree DNA," the news release states. After a months-long laboratory process in Salt Lake City, the college's Investigative Genetic Genealogy Boot Camp received the case last July and used the profile to identify Yeager. The boot camp participants, who typically range in age from 18 to 80, included a 15-year-old high school student named Ethan Schwartz, who Ramapo College says is reportedly the youngest person ever to contribute to an investigative genetic genealogy case resolution. And on and on. So a reference sample collected from Yeager's daughter led to the positive identification of him in March. They stated in a release that plans were being made to return Yeager's remains to his family. The successful identification marked the first case resolution performed by the... I'm not saying all that again. Anyway, yay. I'm certainly glad that he's going to be reunited with his family, but I personally want to know who was buried where they thought he was buried then. Was there someone in there? And if so, who was that? And if he wasn't buried there and he was buried somewhere else or something, then, like, he could... Like, why is his jawbone just hanging around and a bird's just going to take it off? It just seems weird to me. Okay, so if you hear anything behind me, even though I am in the closet of shame, because that's the most soundproof part of my house, right on the other side of the wall is the outside, where it is tornado season where I live. And so there's a storm going through, and there's a bit of hail hitting the side. So anyway, if you hear anything, that's what it is. I'm fine. The tornado was 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm fine right now. So our next article comes from KCTV5.com. Title reads, Kansas City woman accused of decapitating her son and dog in 2022 found competent for trial. Her little mugshot picture there looks like she either has alopecia, which bless, of course, obviously bless, or she's just been ripping her own hair out or something, or like just shaved. It's odd. Okay, Kansas City, Missouri. 2 years after she was ruled mentally unfit to stand trial, the mother accused of killing her 6-year-old son has been deemed competent and will be in court later this month. Editors note, the information below is from a legal document and is graphic. Readers are advised to use their own discretion. Well, I'm the reader and I can handle it. So if you can handle it, stick around. Here we go. So according to previous AP reporting, police received a call from a woman in February of 2022, quote, saying she was concerned someone was trying to harm her. The woman told police she believed the devil was trying to attack her. She denied having any mental illness and hung up the phone, officials said, end quote. Boy, I hope that thunder's coming through. So when officers arrived at the woman's residence to perform a wellness check, they found blood leading up to the front door and could hear her singing inside. They knocked, but the woman did not open the door and sang louder. An officer reportedly looked inside the house and saw the child's decapitated head. Whew. At which point, the officers forced their way into the home through the back door. Once inside, they found Hafes, who was 35 years old at the time, with blood on her legs and feet. The body of the decapitated child was lying nearby, and they found a decapitated dog in the basement. I'm just trying to see how young the child is. Oh, court documents state that Hafes admitted that the child, 6-year-old Carvel Stevens, was biologically hers and that she had killed him. At the time, quote, Hafes' family members said she had struggled for years with drug addiction, depression, severe trauma, and hallucinations, AP reported. The Jackson County Prosecutor's Office charged Hafes with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. But in June of 2022, she was ruled mentally unfit to stand trial. As a result, she was placed in the custody of the Missouri Department of Mental Health, where she reportedly refused to take her medications or cooperate with her treatment plan. Missouri straight up getting hood. Like, we're going to be up there with Oklahoma and Florida before you know it. I pick on you guys. I love you guys. I really do. So in August of 2023, she was removed from court when she began yelling and cussing during her hearing, calling the judge and other people in the court, quote, demented monsters, she calls them, after she decapitated her own child. Okay, making sure I understand that. In early March 2024, a motion was filed ruling Hafes as competent to stand trial nearly 2 years after she was first placed in the state's custody. Wowza. You know, it's hard, even when you understand kind of how the brain works to the degree that, you know, I've been studying this my whole life, and you kind of understand levels and spectrums and all of these different things. You know, you have an idea of it, but man, when it comes to harming kids, it's so hard to not take it as personal as everyone else. You know what I mean? It's hard not to react from that. But anyway, so our next article comes from WVNSTV.com, 59 News. Title reads, "New details released after remains found in 20-year-old cold case on same day suspect dies." Coming out of Beckley, West Virginia. Larry Webb, who was indicted for the murder of Natasha Alex Carter in November of 2023, died on Monday, April 22nd, 2024, after suffering a medical episode in prison. Webb, who was incarcerated at Mount Olive, suffered what police are calling a medical episode. Webb was later pronounced dead at Montgomery General Hospital. According to a press release provided by Captain R.A. Maddy with the West Virginia State Police, Webb's medical emergency began at approximately 10:30 in the morning on Monday. Medical emergency. Later that same day, as part of the ongoing investigation, members of the West Virginia State Police and the Federal Bureau of Investigations continued excavation efforts to locate the remains of Susan and Natasha Alex Carter at Webb's Kyle Lane home. At approximately 4:30 p.m., while excavating the property at 126 Kyle Lane, investigators discovered what are believed to be human remains. These remains are, at present, believed to be those of both Susan and Alex Carter. According to Raleigh County Prosecuting Attorney Ben Hatfield, Webb reportedly killed Susan Carter after he allegedly noticed finances were out of order, which turned into a violent domestic situation. After shooting and killing Susan, Larry Webb then killed Natasha Alex Carter. Webb told detectives he had immediately stored the bodies in his basement before burying them both in a shallow grave on his property. He reportedly told detectives that they could find the remains, or where they could find the remains. Ay, ay, ay. Alrighty, our next article comes from CNN.com. And the title says, "Remains from a mother-daughter cold case were found nearly 24 years later after a deathbed confession from the suspect." A West Virginia father is getting some sense of closure after authorities found the remains of his young daughter and her mother following a deathbed confession from the man believed to have fatally shot them nearly two decades ago. Benjamin Hatfield, the prosecuting attorney for Raleigh County, called it a bit of a poetic ending that not even I could write during a news conference Tuesday. In a detailed, undeniable, unconflicted deathbed confession to one of the investigators in the case earlier this month, Larry Webb admitted to fatally shooting Natasha, who was 10 at the time, and her mother Susan nearly 24 years ago. In 2000, the Carters were living at Webb's home, authorities said. Webb told the investigator some of his cash in the home went missing, and Webb suspected Susan had, quote, spent a lot of money. They had an argument about it, and he shot her, Hatfield continued. Webb said he felt he then had no choice but to shoot Alex to avoid detection for having killed Susan. Webb told the investigator he stored their bodies in the basement of his home and over the course of two nights dug a shallow grave in the woods on his property. This is where he buried the pair together. Alex's father, Rick, said Tuesday it was, quote, kind of a sad day, but also a happy day because I could bring my baby home. Oh, that's tough. It's been about 24 years and this case went cold so many times. almost lost hope several times, he said. So Webb had been a suspect from the start of the investigation. In October of 2023, Webb was indicted for first-degree murder in Alex's death, but neither Carter nor Alex's bodies had been found at the time. Prior to the indictment, investigators had DNA evidence and witness statements. But after the incident, quote, due to the health of Larry Webb, the court proceedings were delayed for various reasons. He was moved to a nursing home. We had issues with transport, Hatfield said. We had issues with securing his medical clearance to be incarcerated. It was a bit difficult to move through the court process in the early stages, end quote. Ahead of a court date earlier this month, one of the investigators was able to speak with Webb at his nursing home facility, according to Hatfield. Webb confessed to the killings, detailing his motive and the location of the bodies in the back of his property. Quote, the confession aligned with exactly the investigative efforts and the evidence collected, end quote, by authorities. So authorities began excavation efforts on April 9th, but it was a difficult process as Webb's description of the location was limited and clouded by memory and by physical and mental health at the time. That day, investigators brought Webb to the dig site, but his health had deteriorated so badly it proved to be fruitless, they said. Webb was transferred from the hospice unit at the Mount Olive Correctional Complex, where he was incarcerated, to Montgomery General Hospital, where he died Monday morning. Hours later, the bodies of Susan and Alex Carter were found. The investigation is ongoing, and the remains are with the coroner's office. On Tuesday, Lafferty offered some advice for anyone who finds themselves in his position. Quote, just never give up. Never give up hope of finding your child, end quote. Well, at least he had that kind of closure, you know. At least he got that kind of closure. Alrighty, our next article comes from triblive.com. Tribe live.com. And the title reads, Remains Found in Fayette County Identified as Missing 17-Year-Old Girl. Skeletal remains found last week in Fayette County have been identified as a 17-year-old girl who was reported missing in November, according to coroner Bob Baker. The remains found in North Union were that of Caitlin Woolery, he said. Authorities were led April 16th to an area near Washington Avenue and Hogsett Lane where her remains were discovered. Where is this from? Regional to where? Tribe Live. I don't know. Let's see. A forensic anthropologist team helped with the recovery and an autopsy was performed Friday, Baker said. The cause of death has not been released. According to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Woolery was last seen November 23rd. I wonder where this is. Okay, through the magic of editing, poof, it's a magic, I'm back. The Tribe Total Media is out of Tarentum, Pennsylvania. Never heard of it. Anyway, moving on. Our next one came from an international listener. It is from the BBC.com. Yes, you hear my happiness because I just happen to love the UK. Never been there. Would love to, but anyway, the title reads, Emmonford, school stabbings. Ooh, I hope the mic picked that one up. The thunder. Emmonford school stabbings. Girl 13 faces charges. A 13-year-old girl will appear in court later, charged with three counts of attempted murder after two teachers and a pupil were stabbed at a school in southwest Wales. Dyfed Powys police said the teenager was arrested at the scene at, I can't pronounce this, in Emmonford, Carmarthenshire. Carmarthenshire? If I nailed that, somebody tell me. Two teachers and a teenage pupil were taken to hospital with non-life-threatening stab wounds, thank God. They have all since been discharged. The Crown Prosecution Service said the girl had also been charged with possessing a bladed article on a school premises and would appear at Lanalei Magistrates Court on Friday. The school went into lockdown for about 4 hours at 11:20 BST on Wednesday after teachers Fiona Elias and Liz Hopkin and a pupil were injured. SUPT Ross Evans said, quote, "A 13-year-old girl was arrested at the scene. I can confirm she now has been charged with 3 counts of attempted murder." Following this, yesterday evening, our control room received a number of calls reporting concerns about messages being shared on social media, which had references to the incident here at that place. Officers swiftly carried out a warrant at the home of the person believed to be responsible for this content. So the investigations, SUPT Evans said, were being run separately, but officers were looking to see whether the alleged offenses were linked. Quote, "I would urge people not to speculate or share pictures or videos of either investigation," he said. He thanked the other emergency service, the NHS, and others who helped after the incident. Teachers and staff are expected to return on Friday to prepare the building for pupils to come back on Monday. On Wednesday, Wales's First Minister, Vaughan Gething, said he was shocked to hear what had happened. Quote, "A deeply worrying time for the school, families, and community," he said. Writing on X, formerly known as Twitter. Twitter's like Prince now, isn't it? Did Elon Musk turn Twitter into like a Prince situation? Anyway, writing on X, UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said, quote, "I want to thank the police and emergency services for their ongoing response, and my thoughts are with all those affected," end quote. Head teacher James Durbridge praised staff and students for their calm and mature response to the lockdown, saying it had been a difficult day. And this is going to sound so, it's going to seem a bit uncouth, if you will. But it's, how do I even say this without it sounding terrible? It is not a comfort to hear that kids bringing weapons to schools with the full intent of harming people in that school doesn't just happen in the U.S. Now, granted, I know there's a whole thing when it comes to guns, and we don't argue that stuff here. That's not what we're here for. But the point is that to hear that that this happens in other countries makes me feel like our country is slightly less freakish when it comes to those sorts of things. I don't know. I told you it was going to sound bad. Moving on. Now, the girl, the young woman who sent me this one, you're going to thank her. This is fun. So it comes from WECT.com. WECT News 6. Watch Live, Bridge Project. Okay, so the title reads, "Babies named Johnny Cash and June Carter born at same hospital on same day. Precious." So a little distraction from gore and guts, right? So Huntsville, Alabama. Two mothers in Alabama who did not know each other got the surprise of a lifetime when they gave birth to babies named Johnny Cash and June Carter at the same hospital. What are the odds? The Clarks welcomed their daughter, June Carter Clark, on April 10th at Huntsville Hospital, just down the hallway from where the Davis family welcomed their son, Johnny Cash Davis, on the same day. The family said that this was the coincidence of a lifetime. It sure is. Mom Sophie Clark said they landed on the name June Carter simply because they loved the name June, and her husband's first name is Carter. So it's not even, it wasn't even, you know what I'm saying? Mom Nicole Davis said Johnny Cash wasn't their first choice, but eventually decided it was the perfect fit. Quote, "The baby's dad's name is Johnny Lee Davis Jr., and we tried on Johnny Lee Davis III for a while, and we just could never get comfortable with it. It just never caught. So we had to go back to the drawing board, she said. At first, we thought a lot about Nashville because we love that area. We spend a lot of time up that way. We thought Johnny Nashville at first, or Johnny Nash, but then we thought, oh, wait a minute, Johnny Cash would be perfect, and we'll call him Cash. The families first found out about the coincidence thanks to an encounter in the elevator. A family member was visiting the baby girl and ran into Johnny Cash's dad, who was wearing a Johnny Cash t-shirt. The family member mentioned that it was interesting to see someone wearing a Johnny Cash t-shirt because he was there to meet baby June Carter. Precious. Johnny Cash's dad responded, "That's weird. We just had a baby named Johnny Cash." The family member then told the Clarks about the encounter, and the parents knew immediately that they had to meet the other family. But anyway, so on and on. It's a long article, but that is just precious. Absolutely precious. And then we just go right back in for the jugular. Coming out of OttawaCitizen.com. Ottawa Citizen. Title reads, "I haven't done nothing. Mechanic Jimmy Wise, twice a serial murder suspect, died last week at 80. Jimmy Wise, a burly, lantern-jawed mechanic whose name once sowed fear across the Ottawa Valley, died last week at Montford Hospital. Bye. Jimmy Wise, a burly, lantern-jawed mechanic." What the hell does lantern-jawed even mean? "Mechanic, whose name once sowed fear across the Ottawa Valley, died, blah, blah, blah. Wise was twice investigated for serial murder by the Ontario Provincial Police and, according to court documents, was a suspect in more than 50 unsolved arson cases that terrorized Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry for decades." Dick. "Quote, he's going to have to go in front of the big guy upstairs now," said Gary Rankin, the brother of murder victim Randy Rankin, 46, of Moorwood. Randy Rankin, a children's clown and racetrack announcer, was shot in the heart through his basement window before the sun came up on February 17th of 2007. His shooting was one of six homicides and three suspicious deaths that the OPP sought to tie to Wise during two serial murder investigations conducted three decades apart. Wise was charged with just one of those deaths, the 2009 shooting at Chesterville's Ray Collison, but he was acquitted by a jury in December of 2020 after 6 days of deliberation. Collison, a handyman and father, was shot 5 times and stuffed in a Moorwood drainage culvert, where his body went undiscovered for 5 years. Collison's skeletal remains were found just down the road from where Rankin had been shot in Moorwood. By the time Wise stood trial for Collison's murder, he had already suffered a debilitating stroke and watched the court proceedings from a wheelchair. In a published death notice, his family said Wise passed away peacefully in hospital Friday after spending his final years at an Ottawa long-term care home. Blessed to his family, but not to him. You know what I'm saying? He was 80 years old. And then it says that he grew up on a farm in North Dundas Township, one of 12 children. He learned to work with his hands and shoot with a rifle. As a young man, he also assembled a criminal record that included convictions for break and enter, armed robbery, and car theft. He earned a reputation as someone who hated police officers, small animals, and old men, according to search warrant applications filed by the OPP. Wise escaped from 3 different jails and once hijacked a car at gunpoint before being recaptured. When he was not in jail, Wise, a motorsports enthusiast, supported himself as a mechanic. Quote, "All I have to do is hear an engine and I know what's wrong with it," he used to boast. Trouble followed him. It's a whole thing. Point is, he's gone now. So, you know, bless his family, but good riddance. Okay, our next one comes from the MontrealGazette.com. You know, I feel like it's a little bit naughty that we're getting this kind of insight into Canada's crime stuff, you know. I don't know, maybe you live in parts of the United States where you get the pleasure of hearing about things from Canada. You know, maybe that's normal, but here in the southern middle southern, we don't hear too much about Canada. We really don't. Anyway, so it's kind of like, ooh, getting a glimpse. From the Gazette, title reads, Lachine woman found guilty in violent death of Jimmy. This is French, and I'm going to be in trouble. I'm going to butcher names, so I'm going to apologize in advance. But anyway, so Véronique Manceau was also found guilty of causing an indignity to Matho's body by keeping it in a barrel in her garage 4 days. All right, Dahmer. A jury that had been deliberating for a few days at the Montreal courthouse emerged with a verdict Saturday morning and found Véronique Manceau guilty of first-degree murder in the death of Jimmy Mathot, a man who was tortured, stabbed, and poisoned inside her home in Lachine. Kind of sounds like that one lady that just had her whole court case. Like, they had to put, like, spit bags on her and stuff. She was crazy. Manceau, 38, was also found guilty of causing an indignity to his body by keeping it in a barrel in her garage for days before the Montreal police received a tip about what happened to the victim during Labor Day weekend in 2021. The tipster also said Manceau relied on others to help her clean up the mess left after he was assaulted, stabbed, and forced to drink a flammable liquid. Jesus. Oh, he was kind of handsome. He's kind of got, I don't know, it's just one picture, but he's got, he was kind of handsome. The jury heard evidence that Manceau consumed crack cocaine hours before she and a minor killed the victim during a party at her house on Rathwell Street. She became paranoid during the party and said she suspected him he was a spy for her violent ex-boyfriend. Crack. Testimony heard during the trial portrayed Manceau as someone who liked to party and who used crack cocaine often. According to her friend who testified hours before he was killed, she and Manceau went to the nearby apartment of Everett Roger Clayton to get crack from him. They had to go visit the crack dealer. You know, that's important. You gotta go there first. The friend, whose name cannot be published for the time being, implied that Manceau had performed sexual acts on Clayton in the past in exchange for crack. Lovely. The minor, a friend of Clayton's, was at his apartment as well, and all four decided to take the short walk to Manceau's home. When they arrived, they found that man asleep inside a car parked outside, Matheau. He had recently resumed a relationship with Manceau's friend after being released from jail. So shortly after the party started inside Manceau's home, right? Matheau was assaulted by both Manceau and the minor. He was also stabbed and died in agonizing pain on the living room floor. Ugh. One witness said that at one point, Manceau tossed a chicken pot pie at Matheau and told him it would probably be his last meal. So when Manceau's friend expressed regret over losing her boyfriend, she simply replied with, quote, "It had to be done." The friend is charged with being an accessory after the fact to murder and offering an indignity to a human body and is scheduled to have a trial at a later date. The minor who helped Manceau was 17 at the time and is 20 now. On December 3rd, 2022, he pleaded guilty to first-degree murder in youth court. He is currently serving a 9-year sentence and, during the trial, he was cited for contempt of court because he claimed he was unable to recall much of what happened when he was called as a witness in Manceau's trial. Last year, Clayton pleaded guilty to being an accessory after the fact to murder. According to a joint statement of facts entered into the court record when Clayton pleaded guilty, quote, "Although the accused did not take part in the altercation leading to the victim's death, he nonetheless recognizes that he was on the premises while the murder took place and that he gave advice to the persons present on the premises and involved in the murder as a the best way to clean and dispose of a corpse. Well, he just sounds lovely. Quote, Clayton gave advice to the group on the best ways to clean the blood in the house and to dispose of the body. The victim was wrapped in a sheet or shower curtain and transported into the garage. The group disposed of clothing items that were bloodied in cardboard boxes. In the following days, the blue rain barrel was brought to the residence in Lachine where the homicide occurred, and the victim's corpse was placed inside. On the day Clayton pleaded guilty, he had 50 days left to serve on the 2-year sentence he received for the role he played after Matho was killed. During Manso's trial, the jury was told that Clayton died recently. Recordings of testimony he gave during the preliminary inquiry held in Manso's case were played for the jury to hear. Superior Court Justice Daniel Royer will schedule a future date for a sentencing hearing. A conviction for first-degree murder comes with an automatic life sentence, and the offender is required to spend 25 years behind bars before being eligible for full parole. Royer still has to sentence Manso for what she did to that poor man's body. Wow. And see, guys, I still have some articles. I still have some that I want to share. So you know what that means, guys. Especially the international listeners. I know it feels like I'm bullying you, and I'm really trying not to. But I love the stories coming from other places. It just makes me feel like our country is, you know, I mean, I love my country, but you know what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to talk shit, but you know what I'm saying. But the more you guys send me, the more of these you get, the more episodes of these you get. I just kind of quit doing the Fridays because I don't want to get on you. I just don't want to get on your nerves posting too much. You know what I'm saying? So, but apparently you guys want it. So it sounds like we're going to have a Friday one as well. So I hope you guys enjoyed your weekend. I enjoyed mine. Actually, I have 2 new family members. They are ducks, Daryl and Carol. Yes, 2 ducks, Daryl and Carol. So that's exciting. Garden is being planted and all of that. So for everyone that worked the weekend, thank you for putting up with all of us. I certainly hope that my people were kind and cordial because we're all in this world just trying to survive together, right? We're all just rinse and repeating the shit out of this the best that we can with a smile on our faces. So, but yeah, so I love you guys. Behave yourselves. I have a concert to go to on Tuesday, so I'm sure you'll hear about that. Have a good week, guys. Bye.